Today is November 15, 2013. This is Desiree Hargis on behalf of the H.J. Lucher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. As part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Legacy Project, today I am interviewing Bill Purdy over the phone about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Bill, can you begin with when and where you were born?
Yeah, I was born in Chicago in 1946.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in a town called Hinsdale, which is outside Chicago, about 20 miles or so west of Chicago. Maybe 30 miles, I don't know.
And how were you first introduced to sports? In other words, did you play any other sports before you took up rowing? And when did you begin playing sports?
Oh, yeah, I always played sports as a kid. I played Little League, but I was terrible. Played tennis when I was a kid. I remember playing golf, that sort of stuff. I went away to boarding school, and that's when I first had rowed. My brother had rowed prior to me, but I went there, and as with all the other kids, you were required to do three sports. So I did football, hockey, and rowing. And rowing was the one that seemed to fit me the best, even though at that point I was, let's say, on the pudgy side, so a little too heavy. But liked the rowing. Rowed for 4 years, but we only rowed for about, I think, 2 months each year, so it wasn't, very intensive.
Did you have a lot of friends who rowed as well, or anyone else in your family that also rowed?
My brother had rowed, and I really liked it, and so when I went off to college, that was one of the things which I was thinking about doing. Even though when I did go off to college, I remember I signed up to try to play hockey, too, because I wasn't sure which I wanted to do for sure. But once I got into rowing, I quickly dropped the hockey and so spent 4 years at University of Pennsylvania rowing, and that's where I really started to do a lot of rowing. And we all often joke that we probably rowed more in the first month than we rowed our whole entire 4 years in high school. So it was a whole different level of the sport.
Mm-hmm. Were there any athletes that you looked up to, admired, or sought to emulate?
No. In fact, I really didn't know anything about rowing other than what we were doing, and that my brother had rowed for 3 years, and it was just a sort of a local sport for me. Obviously got to know some people very well, so our whole world, not our whole world, but our major social group at Penn was the rowers that I hung around with.
Did you ever feel like when the rowing was most intense that it was ever interfering with your social life, or was it more like school and social life were interfering with your rowing schedule?
I always thought of it as all of, one thing, that rowing was part of college. We rode 6 days a week. We often thought of ourselves as being, crazy, because we would add up the number of hours that we or the number of minutes we'd race each year and the number of hours that we put in rowing. And it was just crazy compared to the other sports. But it became a real, way of life. And I didn't think one interfered with the other. In fact, those few times that we were off from rowing, whether it's during final exam week or things like that, we'd often sort of find ourselves saying, well, what are we going to do for the afternoon? I guess we're going to study. But it just became a regular part of our life. Now, there were some people who, that it became too much, and it was too much of an interference with their studies or their social life or stuff like that. But I always enjoyed it and always felt that it was it really helped me with the other things. Just being able to get out and do some exercise for 3 hours each day really made my life a lot easier and made it easier to study and sort of an organization that gave me sort of a structure in life, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of your major victories or accomplishments in rowing prior to the 1968 Olympic trials?
Well, we went to Penn, and Penn had a rowing history, but in the years previous, hadn't done that well. And so our freshman group came along, and we were fairly big. That freshman year, I don't think we won any races, but we we came in second a lot. And then when we became sophomores, they got a new freshman coach who had been in the 64 and 60 Olympics and was a great gung-ho, high-energy type guy. And he all of a sudden made the freshman crew very strong and really built up the whole Penn program. So in my 4 years there, my junior and senior year, we won the IRAs, which is the Intercollegiate Rowing Association Championship. And that was the first time Penn had won it in 50 years. So we won it 2 years. And then that was probably the major thing. Now, Harvard was not part of that race because they always raced Yale at that time. And Harvard beat us during the regular season. So we always thought of ourselves as probably the second fastest crew in the country. So we had really felt like we brought Penn rowing up to a whole new standard.
Mm. So tell me about the 1968 U.S. Olympic trials. Any challenges or problems there?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, as I said, we had lost to Harvard twice in the year, but we won the IRAs, which was the final race of the year. And then what Joe Burke did, who was our coach, he'd been a very, very famous coach. He'd won the Sullivan Award in 1940 with his single sculls rowing, and was just the opposite of that freshman coach, which I was talking about. Joe was very quiet, very sort of told you what needed to be done and wasn't rah-rah and all that, but really sort of expected us to go out and do the best. And a lot of people felt very, very close to Joe. And one of the things that happened at the end of the IRAs, two of our team members were replaced by two other people, one who was a freshman and one who was on the junior varsity. One who had been on the third boat. And those two guys actually wound up being on my four, but they added quite a bit to our boat. So we went out to Long Beach, and at that point they had the eights and the single scull trials in July, and then the other five boats, there's four with coxswain, four without, pair with coxswain, pair without, and quad. They all had their trials in late August. And the reason for that was they figured that if there were people on the eight-oared shell that had lost or people in the single sculls trials who had lost, it gave them a chance to try for the smaller boats. And we went to Long Beach, and in what some people have called, I guess they're mainly the Harvard graduates, have called the greatest rowing race ever. It's 2,000 meters, and we lost to Harvard by 4 inches. It was a photo finish. And so at that point, it looked like all of our hopes of going to Mexico City were sort of ruined. We did, however, break up into small boats, and our eight broke up into a four with coxswain and a four without coxswain. And then we went back to the trials at the end of August, and we won. The four without coxswain didn't make it, but our boat did. And it was interesting, the boathouse next to us in Philadelphia is the Vesper crew, and they'd won the gold medal in the eight in 1964, and they were considered a very strong contender for the four. They had won the eight in 1964, and they were considered a very strong contender for the four with in 1968, and we were able to beat them. And so that was a highlight. And on the way, we won the four-oar with coxswain national championship. I can't remember 40 years ago where that was held, but so that was another highlight.
Mm. Tell me about the reaction of your friends and family and, you know, everyone that knew you when they found out you made the Olympic team.
Nobody could believe it. It was sort of, you know, I thought about this. I've read stories about some of the Harvard crew members who, when they went to Harvard freshman year, put up posters saying, we're going to make the Olympics in 4 years. It never dawned on me that I would ever make the Olympics. Now, we had tried to make the Pan Am Games the year before, and I was in a four-oared without coxswain, meaning that one of the oarsmen has to steer the boat. And unfortunately, the person we had doing it had not done that much. So we wound up I think starting in lane four, going over to lane one, and then to lane six and lane five or something like that, some weird course, and we lost by half a length to a boat that went straight down the course. So we had the capability of doing it, but I had never considered myself capable of going to the Olympics and never really thought about it. And I think that when we finally made the team, I think people were sort of thrilled and shocked and said, wow, that's really something else. Mm-hmm. And I came from an area that I don't think that any of my real close friends or family knew people who had been in the Olympics. We knew some people who had had other achievements in sports, but not the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. What about financial support to do your sport at that time? How were you able to, travel for competition and be able to afford to do your sport?
Yeah, that was all part of the athletic program at Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was covered. So, you know, if we had away races, we'd usually take a bus, but occasionally we flew, and then the rowing shells were driven up. If we had to spend the night, that was all taken care of. So it was part of, just like in most of the college team members at that time, if their sport was a varsity sport, then everything was covered.
Mm, that's wonderful.
And then afterwards, when we graduated, the Friends of Pennsylvania Rowing, since we were our crews, both in the 8 with Coxon and the 4 with Coxon, they were all Pennsylvania rowers. So they supplied that for us. So that was one thing which we didn't have to worry about.
Oh, yeah, that's really nice. So after you made the Olympic team, let's talk about the pre-games training period and acclimation to altitude.
Yeah, that was a problem. I mean, most of us, especially with rowing, because the thing about altitude is you don't get your second wind. And so if you're running a 100-meter dash, it probably doesn't have that much of an effect. But if you're doing some long-distance sport and rowing would fall into that, that was a problem. One of the problems for us was that the coach of the Adort Shell, Harvard, was the Adort Shell coach. And then they had a small boat coach who was not our coach. So that caused a sort of a problem. Let me backtrack. The guy that was our coach, when the Adort Shell lost and we went in the 4 with Coxon, our head coach said, why doesn't the freshman coach take over, since he had won a gold medal in the 4 without Coxon and a bronze medal in the 4 without Coxon? So he was really our coach and really got us ready and was probably a major factor for us getting into the games. So we didn't have him with us in Gunnison, Colorado when we trained, even though we spoke to him nightly and he made up our workouts and all that sort of stuff. And then he finally did come down to Mexico City in those last few days. So it was a little difficult for us to not have the coach with us. We were, we're all young then. We had one freshman, one sophomore, one junior, and one senior, plus a graduate student as coxswain. So compared to the other crews we raced, I had this gut feeling that most of them were at least 4 or 5 years older, had quite a bit more experience as far as the crews we raced in Mexico City. The altitude was somewhat of a problem in that the coach we had was more of the coach we had in Gunnison was more saying, let's take it easy and gradually work up to what we can do. Ted Nash, our coach from Penn, was more the attitude, let's keep on our regular schedule. It'll kill us at first, but we'll get used to the altitude faster. Probably one of the most disheartening thing was on the second day we arrived in Gunnison. This was in September. It snowed, so we were sort of saying, wow, what's this going to be like? But that was the only snow we had in 2 weeks there, I think. Trying to row at the high altitude was really different. We felt that we, just weren't as good because we'd really tire out. We'd row 1,000 meters, and you just didn't get that wind like you did before. After 2 weeks, it did get better, but it was never quite the same.
While you were in Colorado during the training period, did you remember hearing anything about an Olympic project for human rights or receiving letters from the Harvard rowing crew about that?
Well, we trained with Harvard. And that was one of the interesting things, that for some members of each crew, there was this real rivalry still. And I felt, hey, there are our team members, and I really actually got to know quite a bit of them and you know, got to become friends with them. There were two or three members of the Harvard crew that were especially adamant with this. I think, quite frankly, at my stage, I was just so excited to be on the Olympics, and all I wanted to do was to think about rowing. So I was a little bit naive at this whole thing. And I listened to what they were saying, but I felt that I had maybe not more important things, but more personal things that I had to take care of, that I had to make sure that I was in as good shape as I could possibly do and basically do as well as I could.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So, yes, I'd heard about it. Was I actively involved? No. Mm-hmm. No.
What about the demonstrations and violence against students in Mexico City that's come to be known as the Tlatelolco massacre? Did you remember hearing anything about student protests and violence in Mexico City about 10 days before the start of the games?
You know, that's one of the things that really shocked me later on when I heard about what had happened. I think we probably heard about protests, but as far as what actually happened, no. In fact, I probably didn't really know the true story for 4 or 5 years. I mean, it seemed to be, for some people, well hidden, or maybe I just didn't know about it. My cousin, who was a little bit older than I, had lived in Mexico City for many years. And so when my family went down there to watch me, they actually stayed with them. And whether this was purposely hidden or whether it was just me not reading about it, but I don't remember us talking about it. We certainly didn't talk about students getting massacred.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was a real shock when I found out about that later.
Well, there was quite a cover up by the government and other people, but it's not surprising that you didn't hear much about it.
All right.
Impressions of Mexico City and the Olympic venues.
Once again, and you've probably heard this from other people, that you're just sort of in awe, just sort of in shock at being there and everything. One of the interesting things, I was in Mexico City last week for 18 hours for a funeral, and it sort of brought it all back. But just the poverty could, you know, be one thing that one is struck with. The altitude you're struck with. The actual venue, having never been to other venues, this was, you know, really cool. I mean, this was all this stuff, you know, just for us, and people wanting autographs, and, you know, new buildings being built, although they were, you know, mainly cinder block and that sort of stuff. But the Olympic Stadium and the rowing facility was certainly just top-notch. I mean, it just, when you're 20 or 21 and this is your first, you know, time doing this, it just sort of blows you away.
Mm-hmm. What were your accommodations like in the Olympic Village?
We stayed in a high rise, and we were, I can't remember whether it was like 6 or 7 floors, and we were not at the top, but I think around the 4th floor. And we had just sort of, like I said, like it seemed like cinder block rooms, but it was, I'm sure that they were finished. I remember that I was in a room with about 3 or so of us, and I moved my bed because there was an unused big shower space that they hadn't gotten the water to. It was one of the showers that I guess didn't work. But for some reason, I can remember I just moved my bed in there, so I had a room that was a little bit quieter to sleep in. I can remember riding on the elevators, and since we were sort of near the top, we'd always ride with the other athletes, and you could pick them out, who were the track ones, who were the swimmers, that sort of stuff. And there was a room downstairs that I remember that had a TV in it. And but you know, I think with the rowers, we tended to spend most of our time together. But certainly the sleeping accommodations and the food and everything, it was all, you know, great. It was fine.
Mm-hmm. What were your impressions of security measures at those games?
Boy, you know, it's hard to think back on that. I can remember, you know, having some, but not being burdened by it. I mean, I think certainly now it's harder to get on an airplane here in the States than it was back then. I don't remember any specific instances of security. I remember, you know, seeing policemen and, you know, that sort of stuff. I think my impression at that point, it was all just basically crowd control. Because there were a lot of, you know, kids and everything that wanted autographs, and they didn't care who you were, but they just, if they saw the USA on your jersey or Denmark on your jersey, then they'd want your autograph. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember being repressed or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So you said the food was great. Did you or anyone you know succumb to any food or waterborne illnesses while there?
No, I got a finger infection, which was interesting, and not sure how that happened, but they loaded me full of penicillin, so much so that I finally got a rash on the third day, and so now I stay away from penicillin. I also had a bad cold, but I don't remember anybody getting vomiting, diarrhea, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But, you know, that's 45 years ago, so I, which I can't believe. But anyway.
How about the opening ceremony? What are your most vivid memories of the opening ceremony?
Yeah, that's something that you'll never forget. I can remember being in the field outside, getting us all lined up, and, you know, we were a little nervous, and we were, you know, wondering how long this was going to take and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, all getting lined up and then starting to march in, and they did it by height, so some of us rowers were together with the basketball team, and there were people that you'd sort of heard of and but never met before, so that was sort of fun to be, you know, marching in with them. But then the moment you walk in the stadium of 100,000 people and they're all screaming, it just, I mean, you can't help but get the goosebumps. I mean, that was unbelievable. And then the ceremony, you sort of, you know, hear people speak and you don't listen. Things that I sort of remember, and I was trying to think about this last night, I remember the guy from Mongolia who walked around and carrying the flag with his arm out straight, and I think everybody said, my God, that guy, you know, he's really strong. I remember them letting out how many thousand doves right afterwards, and the doves didn't realize they were at 7,700 feet, so they circled the field for several minutes and basically pooped over everybody. I mean, it was sort of like, what are these doves doing? And the Olympic Committee had given us these capes. Somebody, I don't know why, but we were carrying these rubber capes, which were the most god-awful looking things, but they became very, very handy just to take the cape out and throw it over our heads when the pigeons were flying overhead. So that's probably my biggest memory. And then, of course, when the torch and the flag come in, that's very impressive.
Mm-hmm. So. Who was your closest friend on the team while you were there in Mexico City?
Well, as I said, one of the interesting things is that the five of us who were on that team all came from different groups. The four rowers had not been on the same crew. I had been the only one who had been on the varsity all year. One was on the junior varsity. One had been on the third boat, and one had been on the freshman boat. And the coxswain was from the graduate school, so he'd been to Penn several years earlier. So I guess I became closest with Luther Jones, who was the coxswain, and I rode right behind him, the three men. So, Luther Jones was the stroke, and I rode right behind him at number three. So I guess we became the closest. I also became very close with some of the Harvard crew and had a great time with them.
Hmm. What about interactions with other national teams? For example, did you have any interactions with members of Soviet bloc national teams?
Not that I can remember. I mean, we'd go out and, you know, we'd see people, and there was a center that you could play ping pong and talk to people and that sort of stuff. One of the things that I regret, sort of, as I told you, my cousin lived there, and so I spent some of the time not in the Olympic Village, but with my family and with my cousins in Mexico City. So I probably missed out on some of that. But I can remember talking mainly to some of the U.S. track team, some of the swimmers. And I didn't get to know personally any of the people from the other countries. I sort of certainly talked to people, and we traded pins and all that sort of stuff, but there were no lasting friendships which started.
Mm-hmm. 68 was kind of a height of the Cold War. Did you feel any of the effects of that while you were at the games?
I think that there was some tension between us and the Soviets, and especially since we were in the finals with them. But I guess the only time I thought about it, and I just had this memory of Avery Brundage giving all the athletes a talk, and this may have been in Denver prior to us arriving in Mexico City, but I just sort of walked away with this feeling, you know, this is really stupid. What's this guy talking about? And we're here just to, you know, play in the games and do the best we can. And, you know, the prime purpose is not to beat the Soviet bloc or anything like that. And so I felt that it was, in the athletes, it may not have been that big a deal, especially for the athletes who were there for the first time.
Mm-hmm. 1968 was one of the first times that they implemented a kind of a standardized drug testing program. Do you remember anything about this?
Yeah, I remember that when at the finals, and it may have been the other races too, but I certainly remember at the finals we were rowing into the dock and being met by somebody who had a big bucket, and we had to stick our hand in a bucket and blew out and draw out either, I don't know, a white marble or a black marble, and if you got a certain color, you had to go pee in a cup. And that was the only thing that I remembered. You know, for us, the issue of performance-enhancing drugs never even came in the picture. I mean, we've been college athletes, and that had not even been thought of. Now, the only other thing that did seem to play a role is it was amazing how many of these other crews, in our opinion, from other countries, seem to have been spending an awful lot of time at high altitude, or seem to have spent much more time than we did, which probably became one of the major factors that, you know, if you were used to the high altitude, you certainly did better. You know, later you read about blood doping and things like that, but I don't think that we were really aware of that at that point.
Mm. Had you heard anything about the gender verification testing that was going on?
No, once again, we were in an all-male sport, and I don't think we were worried that there were females who were now males that were rowing. You know, I think as I look back on it, maybe there was some talk about this, especially with the Germans and things like that, but, you know, I'm sounding like I was just a sort of a naive kid from Kansas, but I think that, you know, just being there was just sort of an overwhelming experience, and I was so concerned with how we were going to do that I just didn't worry about all those things, I guess.
Well, that's certainly understandable. So let's talk about how you did. How do you feel about the results of your performance?
Well, for the U.S. team, there were, as I said, there were seven crews. There were seven different competitions. My understanding was it was the first time that all seven boats had made the finals. So that was good. We went out, and we had a very young crew, and we came in fifth. And I always felt that I'm not sure we could have ever won the gold medal, but I felt that we could have medaled. And I think we were just sort of, it was one of those days that things didn't feel very good, and part of it is because we were so damn nervous that we didn't know what we were doing, but we just probably didn't row the best race that we could, and so I think we were disappointed that we didn't win a medal, but I think we were, you know, once all the dust has settled and everything, that we were still very proud that we were on the team.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to attend any other events?
No, that was, I think, one of the major errors that they made. That year, what they told everybody is that they only wanted, I don't know, six or seven or eight people from each sport to go to the closing ceremonies. So I remember watching the closing ceremonies on TV. My uncle had arranged to get tickets for my family for quite a few other things. So I went to watch some of the swimming events. But the the television coverage they had there was just so fabulous that you could almost watch it right at home. So I think I wandered into the track stadium once or twice. I remember watching Bob Beamon do his jump, but that was on the TV in the common room of the place we were staying. I guess afterwards, for me, and this may have been one of the things that I wish I'd done a little bit differently, but I spent a lot of the second week when our competition was done with our family and friends in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm. So did you get to do some sightseeing and...
Went to the pyramids and did some of that type of stuff, yeah.
Oh, okay. What about the civil rights demonstrations which took place during the games? Did you see or witness or hear about any of those?
Yeah, you know, once again, that was just low, it was low priority. I mean, I certainly would back what they were doing, but I felt like I had other things that were more important to me at that point on my mind. So.
Mm-hmm. What about the aftermath of the Smith and Carlos protest? I'm sure there was, you know, a lot of media hustle and bustle and whatnot when they were expelled from the village. Did you witness any of that?
Yes, you know, obviously that was a big hubbub, and there was, you know, talks from people who thought they were crazy to people who thought that they were really doing the right thing. I think that's at one point when I sort of said, wow, if these guys are willing to stand up and sacrifice their medals, you know, there must really be something to this. And so that impressed me. I think what was sort of interesting, and I talked to people several times about that they don't really realize, one of the things about that medal demonstration is you don't notice the shoes that were on the podium, that they had Puma shoes, and they were put at right ankles to each other, so that no matter where you took the picture, you could see one of the Puma sneakers. And that, from what I understand, was because Puma was not allowed in the village. And Adidas had the sole contract. And Adidas gave everybody two pairs of sneakers, a bag, and shirts, and all that sort of stuff. And so part of the protest was that, because I think that a lot of the athletes, you know, use Puma products. But, I, you know, once again, that caused a big furor. I think that, you know, some of us were sort of, we certainly weren't close with the Olympic team officials. I think when I look back on it, I sort of think these are guys from the 50s that were trying to keep up with modern times and hadn't really figured out what the 60s was about. And so it certainly caused a stink, and they tried to cover it up as quickly as possible, but it didn't interfere with our sort of day-to-day life, I don't think.
Mm. For you, what was the most memorable or meaningful part of being at the 1968 Games?
I guess just being a part of the team. You know, what an honor that this is, and how very few people have it. And it, a lot of it is just luck. It's sort of, especially for rowing and college rowing, it was what year you were in and what group you were with and all that sort of stuff. So I think just, you know, being a part of something that I had never even dreamed of. So that was, you know, it was great for me.
Mm. What about your homecoming? What was that like, your reception back home, and what did you do when you got back home?
Yeah, I think there was some. I remember we went back to Philadelphia for a while, and then I think Penn had something, and I went to back home. And I remember being invited to I can't remember if it was a dinner or a reception, and they had former athletes there, and the highlight of that was that Jesse Owens was there. So being able to meet him was a real honor.
Hmm.
But then after that, I'd been accepted to the Peace Corps, and my wife and I decided to get married, so we were doing a lot of that. So there wasn't, you know, a lot of parties and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There certainly was no parade where they gave me the key of the city. Now, if I'd won a gold medal, maybe they would have done that. But actually, I think at one point, something in Philadelphia, whether the mayor sent us, you know, that there were letters that came from senators and stuff like that. But yeah, once again, 45 years ago, it's hard to remember.
Yeah, yeah. So Did you continue rowing after 68?
No, as I said, I went into the Peace Corps. Now, the interesting thing is, I was actually I was going to go to Tonga to teach science and math, and then I couldn't due to the Olympics. But while there, the head of the Olympic Rowing Committee got a letter from the Peace Corps saying, "Would anybody be interested to go to Uruguay and coach rowing?" And I said, "No, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like the Peace Corps." But they'd had this whole system worked out that it really would benefit all the poor kids, and so we did that. But that was really the last competitive rowing that I did. And I rowed on and off just a little bit. I have a rowing machine, but I haven't lived in places that have been very conducive to rowing.
Mm. So for you, what was the most meaningful part of being a part of the Olympic movement?
Once again, I think that maybe this is just selfish or anything, but just being a part of the team, I'm just representing your country. And sure, everybody wants to win a medal, and I certainly would have loved to win one, but just even now, when people hear that I was a member of the Olympic team, they sort of look at me and say, "You're kidding," sort of thing. So it's a very small group of people, and I was just very honored to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to today's Olympic hopeful?
I would say to try it because you'll like it. I mean, just keep up whatever you can do to make the team, because you'll never have another experience like it.
Hmm. And in your opinion, what do you think is the legacy of the 1968 U.S. Olympic team?
Well, I think that even though I wasn't a major part of it, I think it really was sort of a turning point for some of the civil rights movements, and it fit into the whole late 60s of what else was going on around the country. It just, maybe it was a leader or maybe it was a follower, but it was certainly some sort of a mirror of what was going on in the U.S. at that time. And I think some major changes took place. I think some of the people that had been with the Olympic committees for years were gotten rid of or stepped down. And I think that, not really knowing much about the whole movement, but I think that things really did change for the Olympic Committee, probably soon to be overshadowed in 1972 when they had the disaster in Berlin with the athletes being killed. But certainly I think that the 68 did, and now that I'm thinking about it, sort of mirror what was going on, especially on the college campuses around the country.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, what are you doing today?
I'm retired. Isn't that nice? I was a pediatrician in private practice in Kalamazoo, Michigan for 20 years. And then I moved to Durham, North Carolina in 1998 and have been and was employed at the Student Health Department for 15 years. I was one of the docs for the first 6 years, and then I was the director for the last 8 or 9 years. Hmm. And I retired a year ago.
Oh, so. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to tell us about?
I think we've covered just about all of it. I mean, it's one of those things that you never forget. I've certainly not been one of those ones that has been, part of Olympic follow-ups too much, because I just haven't run into people who have been part of it. I'm really impressed with what Tom has done as far as trying to get the 68 team together and trying to do this, all these memoirs and that sort of stuff, because I think it's something that is very easily just forgotten, except for what each individual sort of has in his scrapbook. And I think the fact that he's been able to get all the athletes from 68, or most of them, to either write in or talk or to go to these reunions he's had has been a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. Well, unless there's anything else, we can close the interview now.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being generous with your time and with your memories.
Okay, and thank you for keep hounding me because it was not hounding me, tracking me down because that was great because I've been, as I said, traveling quite a bit, so it's been hard. But I'm really glad that we were able to do this.